This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Melbourne's biggest gay voice has a fresh new sound.
Fresh new sound.
Joy 94.9.
Salt and Pepper is here. It's a little bit after 7:05. Good evening, Pete Dillon. Welcome back to the station.
Oh, look, it is so nice to be off the interchange bench and back in the studio playing with the team. I'm sorry I wasn't here last week. I was terribly poorly with... Oh, hay fever and cold and flu, and now my seat has just happily...
You just suddenly got a lot shorter.
Yes, my seat just dropped itself down. It must be these wonderful calves I have.
Oh, yes, and the clogs you're wearing are quite lovely. Look, we had a lovely show last week. Noni and I settled in for a lovely chat. We had a couple of people.
Listening in the bed.
Look, it was a great night, and she was so good to step into the breach at the last minute. And interestingly, I went down with the lurgy shortly thereafter. So Noni being the conduit there, I'm just going to blame her.
Let's do that. Let's blame Noni Hazelhurst.
We do need to thank Noni Hazelhurst for co-hosting with me last week. She's an absolute gem. And when she's in town, we're going to get her back more regularly.
Yes, we should. We also need to thank Maddie Thompson for the news. Thank you, young man.
He's kind of a little spunk, I've decided.
He's a bit of a spunk.
He's a good-looking lad. No, he's a good-looking lad, and he's got a very nice smile.
And we're not talking about his little tush. We also need to thank, of course, the very fabulous Wes Snelling for his Tuesday cheek.
And whoever he had in the studio with him prior.
Oh, with that box of props.
Box of props, but he has crazy, crazy hair. And I said to him, dude, your hair is epic. Don't ever change it. And he goes, oh, it's a bit poodly. And I said, yeah, I've got a poodle.
That's why I think you liked his hair.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. Look, we've got a really good show tonight.
We have a bit to get through.
We do. We're following an item in the paper, an editorial piece written about bisexuals and pedophilia. And we probably won't talk too much about it until we get into it as an item. But it's an interesting discussion, and we're going to
unpack a few things there.
We're going to unpack a few bits and pieces around that. We're going to talk about an art installation that you and I are diametrically opposed about.
Yes, which is part of the Canberra Centenary Celebrations.
Indeed. It's in the Portrait Gallery somewhere.
So we're going to speak to both the artist, and we're going to talk to a clinical psychologist around that to unpack whether that piece of art is... offensive or not, and we'll make that determination as we go through.
I guess we're going to talk about whether or not it's offensive or if in fact it's counterproductive to health and well-being.
Yes, true.
So, interesting little show.
This is Salt and Pepper.
This is the gayest station in the nation, Joy 94.9. You're listening to Salt and Pepper with Serena and Pete. It must be Tuesday.
And, of course, you're here with us on Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9.
Indeed.
Where it is 14 minutes past 7.
Just a smidge.
On a Tuesday evening. We'd like to hear from you. 0427 Joy 949 is the SMS number.
You can tweet us, Salt N Pepper Joy. And that's salt with an N, Pepper Joy, all one word. Drop us a tweet or drop us a line on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear what you think. Drop us a line.
We'd love to hear from you. We're going to have a bit of a discussion around an article that it was an editorial in the Herald Sun a couple of days ago, and it has a portion of our community rather up in arms.
Look, I did read this, and it's an opinion piece by a gentleman called Alan Howe.
Who is Alan Howe?
He is the executive director and columnist with Melbourne's Herald Sun newspaper. Prior to this, he was the editor of the Sunday Herald Sun from 1993. According to the Punch website, Alan was born in Farnborough, Hampshire, to Royal Air Force parents, but is proudly an Australian. And Punch reports the Queen has twice been fortunate to meet him.
He
has a distinguished career as a journalist, working overseas for the New York Post and the Times London. In Australia, he's also worked as the editor of The Australian magazine and as chief of staff, foreign editor, news editor, assistant editor for The Australian. He's a very accomplished man.
He is.
However, this is a man who has, it's like red rag to a bull when the topic of church and priests come up.
Mm. And the portion of our community he has upset is the bisexual community.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably don't talk enough about the B in the GLBTIQ on this station. And we're going to shortly talk to James Dominguez, who is the president of the Bisexual Alliance of Victoria. But we invited Alan Howe to talk to us, and we got a series of emails, and I'm going to, you and I should read these emails, because I think this will sort of clarify the sort of person he is. We sent a very polite email saying, Alan, we'd like you to join us on the program to present your comments, your thoughts around this editorial. And he responds in his first email, I would normally be quite happy to discuss any issues with you at Joy. Somebody here at the station is a friend of his. But the lunatic, self-obsessed mini-email campaign to which I was subjected after referring to bisexual clergy last week was so absurd, I'm not inclined to give it credibility by responding. It would suggest I took the complaints about it seriously. I don't. No one should. Not a neuron should be exercised in the defence of anyone concerned. It bothers me the Victorians, excited at the prospect of they may be victims, have the time for such nonsense. They should grow up. That was disturbing enough as a response. And I went, well, look, the offer still remains to present your comments. He then sends this next one.
They should grow up. And while I'm at it, can you tell Mr. Dominguez that pedophilia, he also needs a dictionary, is not a psychiatric disorder, it's a crime. Bisexual pedophiles in the ranks of the clergy may or may not have psychiatric disorders. They are criminals. I think I've mispronounced his name.
Yeah, James Dominguez, that's all right.
Dominguez. Mm. Oh, I was trying to get so fancy.
I know. Mm. And then he goes on to say in another email. Now, he just keeps sending these through, and I was wondering what the heck was going on. The lunatic, I insist I am a victim material sent to me suggests serious self-indulgence by people who should know better. Christ, don't these deluded people have lives? And just signs off how.
Well, now, look, yeah. I think before we chat to James, I want to read out the first paragraph of this editorial that Alan wrote, because this is what James and his organisation are responding to. Rather than operate as respected religious institution, as a respected religious institution, the church's response to its deadly infestation of bisexual pedophiles has been to act like gangsters, covering up evidence, hiding criminals, possibly aiding the destruction of evidence, threatening victims, and failing to tell the truth about its actions. You know, some of that would be a statement of fact. What we're reacting to is the notion of bisexual pedophilia and bisexual pedophiles.
Yes.
And the word usage.
Mm. Let's speak to James Dominguez. He is the president of the Bisexual Alliance of Victoria. James, good evening.
Hello.
Talk us through your immediate reaction to this editorial from Alan Howe in the Herald Sun.
Disgust, in a word. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the general content of it. I mean, you know, the problem of pedophilia in the church is of course, you know, terrible, and the cover-ups and the, you know, priests being moved from one parish to another instead of actually, you know, being punished or being taken away from those roles, you know, that's awful. But it's the choice of words. I mean, the choice of words is just wrong. It's wrong on so many levels. It's a bit hard to, you know, name every one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
James, you're the president of the Bisexual Alliance of Victoria. Clearly, portions of the community are reacting to the use of the term bisexual pedophiles. You're talking in terms of disgust. What specifically does this sort of editorial concern you? What is it that has got you very enraged?
Bisexuality, or sexual orientation in general, is not related to a propensity towards pedophilia. They're unrelated concepts. One is, you know, a sexual attraction to somebody of an appropriate age group to you, whereas the other is a pathological desire to have sexual contact with children. I mean, these are one is talking about, you know, sexual relations to people with your, you know, who are in your peers, you know, people of an age where, you know, a sexually active age, and the other is, you know, not. You know, so, these are two completely different categories of people.
And so the issue lies in that very first sentence where the words bisexual and priests are put together. Bisexual and pedophiles are put together.
That's That's right. It's putting those two words together is just, I mean, it's totally unnecessary. It's factually wrong. It's hurtful. It's the kind of thing that just connects these two concepts that are not connected.
Yeah, and I take your point here. I think the point you're making is absolutely correct, that to say that because a priest or a member of the clergy, or indeed any individual that has an attraction to children, be those male children or female children, to suggest they're bisexual is inherently wrong. They are a pedophile, and somebody who is bisexual is a person who has attraction to both sexes as a sexual attraction as an adult. That's your point.
Exactly. And the thing is, these two things in the same person can be totally different. Somebody may be attracted to the opposite sex, of people of their own, you know, relative sort of age group. I mean, anyone sort of over the age of consent, they may be, you know, straight, to put it simply.
Mm.
But they may have pedophilic urges which manifest as an attraction to boys. And these people will tell you they are straight. They self-identify as straight, but they feel sexually attracted for some reason to boys. That doesn't make them gay, just like, you know, the homophobic sections of the community have tried to link pedophilia and homosexuality for many years, using the same kind of things. You know, like with Tell himself, who actually referred to the problem being a few homosexuals or something in the priesthood or something like that, and he basically blamed it on homosexuality and not on a lack of, a failing in the duty of care of the church.
Okay, so to play the devil's advocate here, you know, we've obviously contacted the man himself, Alan Howe. We've tried to elicit some commentary from him. He steadfastly refused to engage in any sort of conversation with us, where he, you know, we'd offer him a safe space to kind of talk through his views. What would you say to him? Because I think what he is saying is, I mean, he's clearly saying that there's bisexual pedophiles, and are we getting too bogged down in the use of particular words in editorial?
Well, that's the thing. His choice of words in this case have actually made himself factually wrong. I mean, is he saying that the only pedophile priests we need to worry about are those who sexually molest boys and girls? So to use his incorrect definition, does that mean we don't have to worry about the massive air quotes here, gay pedophiles and straight pedophiles?
Mm. James, I'm going to actually jump in here.
Yes?
I'm a victim of clerical sexual abuse, or I'm a survivor of clerical sexual abuse, more to the point. I don't believe that anything that any person who is a pedophile or commits that sort of act against a child, this is not about sex, this is about power.
Exactly.
So, and I think we're going on a couple of tangents here that aren't quite as congruous as they could be. So what action has BAV and its associated organisations nationally taken against or taken to Alan Howe that he was so indignant about not joining us on the show?
All that happened was that several members, and these were people who, it wasn't an organised campaign, several people who just happened to be members of our community, and I suspect several who aren't in contact with us, emailed him to say, you know, did you really need to use that particular choice of words? And he responded immediately with hostility and dismissal. His responses were just immediately negative. There was no openness at all.
What did you want him to say? Because, you know, what is the correct term? I mean, we can't sit here and say that pedophiles are only straight, or they're only gay, or they're only bisexual. We know that it cuts across. Okay, we know that Pete's right. It's about power. It's less about sexuality and more about power. What is it that you wanted him to say to you?
I just think that there would have been absolutely nothing wrong with that sentence if he left the word bisexual out entirely. If he said that there was an infestation of pedophiles in the church, and there is not enough being done by the hierarchy of the church to combat this and to make sure people are safe, that would have been absolutely correct and fine, and nobody would have disagreed with him, because he's absolutely correct.
James, I just want to address, did you hear the emails we read out prior to talking to you from Alan Howe?
I heard the tail end of some of them, but yes, I did hear some.
Okay, so he's suggesting that there has been a self-obsessed mini-email campaign to which he was subjected to, that he claims was absurd as one thing. He said that not a neuron should be exercised in the defence. He's also made a couple of references to you that we won't repeat again. And he also says that the lunatic I insist I'm a victim material sent to me suggests self-indulgence by people who should know better. How do you respond to those claims from him as the executive editor of the Herald Sun to suggest that you're, well, quite frankly, all a bit mad?
Or getting bogged down in the minutiae of words.
I think I can respond to that really with two words, which are straight privilege.
Pardon?
This is straight privilege. This is a person who has never been vilified for his sexuality. I mean, I'm presuming that he's a straight man.
Well, you've assumed it. We're not going to declare on this show whether or not that's the case or not.
Okay, that's probably a big assumption, but yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear at least that he's not bisexual, because I don't think he'd be using this terminology if he was. The thing is that bisexuals suffer attacks from all directions. Biphobia is a real thing, and it's a real hurtful thing. Because everyone knows that LGBTI people and LGBTI youth suffer higher rates of depression and mental illness and suicide, but bisexuality is a spike within that group. Bisexual youth suffer higher rates of depression and suicide and mental illness than most other. I'm not sure exactly where they stand in regard to every member of that community, but it's the anger and dismissal and refusal to believe that bisexuality is real, the idea that bisexuals are predators, because this is the thing. I mean, one of the major parts of biphobia is that bisexuals are predatory, that they're heartless and cruel and they break your heart, and that they're predatory and they prey on people. And this is exactly the kind of usage of words that plays into this idea that bisexuals are bad people, that they're predatory people who hurt other people and take advantage of them.
Okay, James, I'm going to have to wrap it up there. We've really enjoyed chatting to you tonight. Just before we sign off, where can people find your organisation online? Give us a website address.
It's bi-alliance.org.
bi-alliance.org.
We'll flick a tweet out.
We certainly will. Thank you for joining us tonight, James. We really appreciated your input on this really serious editorial issue. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Very nice young man.
Yes,
very passionate.
Thank you, James.
Indeed.
Messages.
Messages, I think so.
Let's have a kiki.
I want to have a kiki.
Lock the doors. Right.
Let's have a kiki.
You're having a kiki with Serena and Pete here on Joy 94.9.
I want to have a kiki.
Dive. Turn. Work. Let's have a kiki.
Ethel Chop here. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Idiot.
You certainly are listening to Joy 94.9. Feel free to drop us a text, 0427-JOY-949. Drop us a line on air at joy.org.au. Even a tweet, Salt and Pepper Joy.
That would be nice.
Wasn't that a lovely track? That was Without You by Keith Urban from his 2010 album, Get Closer.
I'd like to get a bit closer with Keith.
Well, you know, he's kind of pretty. And he's got lovely hair, and I don't mind a lisp. I find it really sexy. I don't know why. I really wanted one when I was a kid, a lisp and some braces and perhaps a broken limb with a cast.
Oh, see, I had the lisp.
Not still nice. Do.
Yeah, I know. This is Salt and Pepper here. It's 25 minutes to 8. We're wanting to have a discussion now around a piece of visual art that's part of an exhibition that's happening in the ACT. And there's two people we'd like to speak to. We're going to try and get hold of the artist very shortly, but to... you and I have some diverging opinions on this.
Well, look, the artist in question is a young man called Aaron James McGarry, and he was one of five artists chosen to exhibit in the National Portrait Gallery this year in Canberra for the Portraiture Award. And he's produced a piece of work called Fragility, My Freedom, which looks at the complex issue of youth suicide. And his work is about offering hope from personal experience that it gets better and that life isn't all encompassed with, you know, really terrible times. Look, I've viewed the video and people can certainly see it online, and we grabbed the link, I think, from the gaynewsnetwork.com.
And we'll actually tweet that link probably after the show.
It's worth having a look. It's a very personal piece where Aaron Aaron is using the rainbow flag and reenacts moments of wanting to hang himself from the clothesline. But also, it's got a really strong soundtrack, which is, you know, police sirens and obviously people coming to an event of a suicide, and police tape being wrapped around his neck and all sorts of suffocation stuff. I previously worked as a psychologist, and what I know is there's some really strong research around that talks about the copycat nature of the promotion of any sort of suicidal gestures. We don't report it in the news, for instance. I didn't get a sense of hope from his work, and I'm really keen to chat to him about that. And I feel that as an artist, you know, there comes a responsibility to the audience, and I think it promoted a really different message for me as a viewer, and that concerned me.
I understand the concerns. I get your concerns. I actually saw it as a piece of art, and that's what I looked at it, purely as a piece of art. And reading the messages that he was trying to convey in the written form before I viewed it, I went in to watch this piece with an understanding that this was about a very personal journey. It was about his own suicide attempts when he was a young gay kid growing up in regional Australia, and you and I have talked ad infinitum about our own experiences growing up in similar circumstances. He attempted suicide, and I think I saw it as a representation of not just his struggle as a kid, but that he's come out of it, and it's sort of almost the it gets better thing at the other end, that I am okay, and I did make it through those attempts, and I'm in a position to try and share my own story. So I sort of came at it with a different tack.
It's interesting because I read the same information that you did before I logged on and had a look, and for me, I saw obviously the journey, but it made me worry about young viewers, and it made me worry that if I'm a young homosexual and I'm living in a rural area, and this is me being very glib, but at its base, you know, if I'm a young homosexual and I've got a flag and I've got a clothesline, then hey, then I've got an idea. And I know that's not his intention, and I would never say that.
Yep.
I get that it's his journey, but I think that we need to be very careful about promoting anything that's really, really dark, that shares a level of darkness with a vulnerable population that might, and we know the research is clear around this stuff, you know. So I logged off it feeling really uncomfortable and a bit unhappy, I think. A bit sad, actually.
Yes. Well, we wanted to get the opinion of a medical health professional. And so who have we got joining us, Serena?
Oh, we've got a clinical psychologist by the name of Simon. And his last name is Crisp, and he's a doctor. And he is currently in full-time private practice, practicing as a clin psych since 1990, as well as extensive experience working with adults. He's a specialised in child, adolescent and family mental health, and has been a lecturer in postgrad counselling and ethics and professional issues at Monash and the School of Business. Good evening, Dr. Simon Crisp. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Simon, we sent you this story this afternoon. You've had a chance to view it. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, I'd echo quite a few of Serena's comments on this. Look, it's a bit hard to know exactly what the intentions were of the artist, but I guess, you know, we can all often have good intentions and inadvertently cause things which we don't intend. And my concern is that while I'm very much in favour of people having an opportunity to express their experiences, and certainly, you know, would never want to try and censor art, I think when there's an intention to try and educate or to change people's views in a deliberate sense, then, you know, is this, and, you know, many artists would probably argue that's what they're trying to do, and that's fine. But if that's the intention, then I think we're starting to move into perhaps art as well as some sort of documentary or some sort of educational, particularly, intervention, if you like. And I think when we're starting to do that, then we need to think again a bit more a bit more objectively about, well, what's the best way to do that, and are there any risks involved in that? And clearly, as Serena's pointed out, there are significant risks potentially in this. So my view would be that I think we need to be very mindful of the potential dangers. Having had a look at the clip very quickly, I think there is imagery there that could potentially, to someone who's vulnerable and experiencing, say, depression and suicidal thoughts, potentially give them an idea some resonance to their own thinking about this being a positive action, that is suicide, which, of course, in my view, it's not, and many others' views, it's not. So I think, you know, while something being very abstract would be fine because it's very abstract. You know, it's this, there's something that anyone can read anything into it, and there's no particular strong behaviours that it's suggesting. But I think this clip does, you know, is pretty frank in its and graphic in its imagery, and that's fine as art, and that's great. But I think where that imagery could fairly easily lead on to copycat or imitated behaviours in that way, I think there's some real concerns there.
I think you're right, and you would have heard Pete's commentary as well, and around, you know, the depiction of art and the depiction of that journey. I think that's a really valid point, and I'm in agreement with you here, Simon. I'm not looking to censor art in any way, shape, or form, but I believe, you know, to put your art out in the public space and to tell a story in a public way, there comes some responsibility with that. And my worry is around copycatting. And in the media, we're not allowed to report means of suicide. And you'd probably be across that in your own practice. We know that there's a population of very vulnerable young people out there, and they don't necessarily have to be gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgendered or intersex young people. Young people go through a tremendous amount of crisis. It's the developmental rite of passage, sadly. And my worry is the imagery and what that promotes in terms of idea formation.
Look, I would agree with that. I think, you know, we've got to remember that, you know, someone who's not depressed or not feeling suicidal will, you know, have reasoned thought and will be able to see things from different perspectives, will, you know, weigh up the kind of the balanced view on this topic. And I think that's great. But the problem is that there will be, you know, not necessarily a very small percentage, but a substantial percentage of people who will be potentially in that space. And unless we can really control who sees it, which of course we can't when it's in the public, there is a real risk that someone might find this distressing and or even activate or consolidate, if you like, those thoughts that taking action around suicide is a positive thing in some way or a solution to their problems. And so I think, you know, there's some issues. Now, I think, you know, we shouldn't necessarily jump into the idea that we should eliminate all risk in life.
Well, we can't. Not that's that. Pollyanna, no, you know.
But I think, you know, what I'm hearing from what I've read from the artist is that his intention was trying to get across a positive message about his experience of suicide. And I think that's an admirable ambition. My concern is, though, that he is starting to move into territory, if you like, or into an area of education or of, you know, influencing people's views and attitudes around, you know, fairly serious topics around mental health and depression and suicide. And I think with all good intentions, he might be actually not achieving that. In fact, perhaps doing things counter to that intention. And I would have hoped that there might have been some consideration around, firstly, you know, the content and how that might be interpreted, but also, I guess, you know, to some degree, the gallery shares significant responsibility.
Indeed,
in this
they
because
do.
They're the ones who are putting it up.
And there's also been comment by Federal Minister Simon Crean supporting this. Simon, we have to let you go because we're still trying to get hold of the artist. We're really grateful for your time. And really appreciate you being able to offer us a clinician's point of view on this. And we are most grateful. That's Dr. Simon Crisp. He's a clinical psychologist practicing in private practice and lecturing at both Monash University and La Trobe. Simon, thank you.
Thanks, Simon.
Good night.
Cheers.
We might have a message and digest all of that and see if we can get hold of our artist.
Okay. That sounds good. You're listening to Serena and Pete on Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9, the gayest station in the nation.
Hello, this is Neil Mitchell. Yes, that Neil Mitchell from 3AW. And you're listening to Joy 94.9, which is a good idea. I do too, sometimes.
Isn't that nice to know? That was Olivia Newton-John singing Magic, and that was released in 1980 as part of the Xanadu soundtrack, my favourite movie ever. Saw it at the drive-in on a beanbag when I was a kid.
I was already into my second decade of life. It's scary.
So was I.
1980.
Oh, scary spice indeed.
This next segment we like to call in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things in the news, and it's all relating to a particular organisation. A young fellow has appeared on Ellen. His name is Ryan Anderson. And he's worked his little cartouche off for about 12 years to try and become an Eagle Scout.
Mm-hmm.
So he's done all of this work. He's got all the achievements. But the Boy Scouts of America which we have discussed before about being a bit of a homophobic organisation, has made it clear that he does not agree to Scouting's principle of the duty to God and does not meet their membership standard on sexual orientation, and therefore they will not award him his Eagle Scout. We've got a little bit of audio here from his chat to Ellen DeGeneres, and let's come back and have a bit of a chat about the Scouts.
I think so.
First of all, you have been about Boy Scouts. Right. Okay, so, and you've wanted to be an Eagle Scout for how long?
As long as I can remember, actually. It's been pretty much a lifelong dream for me.
A goal. Yeah. And do you have to go through a whole lot of different things to become an Eagle. It's the final award, right?
Yeah. Throughout all the Boy Scouts, we do a bunch of merit badges, 21 in total. And then after that, there's a big leadership service project.
And what did you do for that?
I actually made a tolerance wall. I've been through a lot of bullying in my life, so I went to my middle school and I created a wall of 288 tiles, and I told all of the students that we're making a wall to combat bullying and show that we love everyone.
Good.
And so,
at a middle school, you went and did that.
Yes.
Good for you.
It was
good
so hard for
you. All middle schools should have a tolerance wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so you were bullied even when you were a Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
You were bullied, and you still... And people knew you were gay. Did your scoutmaster know you were gay?
Yeah, he's known for quite a while now.
Okay, so everyone knew you were gay.
Yep.
And you're going along, and did you think you were going to be able to get this award?
I did. He told me I would, so I believed him.
Okay. And since then... and really, this is the only reason you're not getting... They know you've completed everything. You've done everything you're supposed to do, but they're saying they won't give it to you.
Yep, it's just because I'm gay.
Okay, and your mother then started a petition.
Yes, she did.
Right.
She started a petition on change.org. I never saw how much support
I love mothers like that. Is your mother in the audience?
She's
good
right
for
there.
You.
I have one of the best moms in the world. I'm
well,
so blessed.
Yes, you do. I mean, and so do I. You know, that's what you want. You want your parents to come to your defense and help you and be that mother lion when we need them. So good for you. Thank you so much for being that. All right, so you start a petition and you're thinking you'll get, you know, several thousand.
Yeah,
people.
I wasn't even planning on that, and now we're at almost 400,000 signatures.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Now, it's amazing because you now have other Eagle Scouts sending you their pens. They're saying, I'll give you my pen.
Yeah, it's amazing. Actually, when I entered the troop, it was the same year that another scout had left the troop, and his name is Matthew Kimball, a very, very sweet guy. Basically, he started an organization called A Good Turn, and they are sending their Eagle pens to me. And
he is gay. Am I correct in saying
that? Yes, he is.
But he was closeted, so he got the pen because he even though people knew
he was in the closet when he got his Eagle Award. Yeah,
right. And so he admires you because you aren't in the closet and you're being yourself. And so he wants to give you his pen.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and he started other people. He's asked other Eagle Scouts to send their pens as well.
Yeah. So far, 170 people have pledged to send me their Eagle pen, and 50 of them coming from my own troop.
Wow.
Yeah, it's truly amazing.
That's Ryan Anderson talking to Ellen DeGeneres about his...
I wonder if nobody had questioned his sexuality prior to him applying for his Eagle Scout badge.
Maybe.
Or am I just perpetuating a stereotype there?
Well, I mean, I think he sounds gayer than Moomba. And
sort of kind of my point.
I know. Look... This is the whole, you know, you may in fact be buying into a stereotype there because it sounds gay and looks gay doesn't necessarily mean it's gay. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's my father's fault.
You know, it's, well, I just think what a brave young man he is.
Absolutely.
And how terribly sad that, you know, the man that is inspired by this guy only got his badge because he was in the closet.
Mm.
I worked for a scout camp in America, for Camp America, as
a
lifeguard.
Mm.
And it was a Girl Scout camp, and we had a huge camping area in the middle of a forest, and across the lake was the Boy Scouts. Our camp was run by lesbians.
Rush.
The director of our camp and the woman who ran the kitchen, they were lesbians and they were in a relationship, and they had an adopted child. And this is back in 1993, and they appointed a stack of gay staff. It was an all-female staff.
Mm-hmm.
They had gays in there. They had a bisexual girl in there. They had one girl that was, I think she was transgender. She was kind of early in processing that. Look, I don't think this is representative of all Boy Scouts, of all scouting organisations, because I had a great experience with one. but the embedded homophobia continues to disturb me.
There is a head office of the Boy Scouts of America, and it's had a long ban on gay and lesbian scout leaders. We did offer them an opportunity to speak to us tonight, to put their case, and their non-response is probably speaking volumes, because we were quite clear that we're a gay and lesbian organisation. One of the something else that's come out sort of in line with this that we wanted to talk about was Boy Scouts have grouped gay leaders with child molesters, and I'm not going to use that other word. Let's have a wander through this story, because it's in line with this in some senses.
Well, the Oregon Supreme Court in June ordered the release of 20,000 pages of files kept by the Boy Scouts of America on ineligible volunteers. Mm. So portions of these documents were released online quite recently, which included leaders accused or convicted of molesting scouts.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, one file is about a scoutmaster from Ellensburg who was ousted from scouting in 1974 after the organisation had collected evidence he was gay. A memorandum from the scout executive in a particular organisation at the headquarters in Texas explained that they'd become aware of a suspected moral problem in this scout leader. And he'd been discharged as a scouting camp counsellor on suspicion of homosexuality.
Mm.
And, you know, this man was expelled for the suspicion of. I mean, I think he then declared that he was gay to a friend. But
his record is in amongst a bunch of actual
pedophiles,
offenders
who
preyed on children and on these young boys. So it's quite disturbing that if this was Australia, I would be sure there would be a royal commission. Because
I don't think so. Australia doesn't do anything about it.
Mm,
they're yet to do anything about it.
True. We did invite the Boy Scouts of Australia to give us their thoughts as well, but they're a non-aligned organisation, so the response was nil. We probably need to have some messages and wrap this baby up, Serena.
We do. Right? We need to introduce the next show too.
Of course we do. Crikey.
You're listening to Serena and Pete on Salt and Pepper on Joy 94.9. Oh, Pete Dillon, we are bang out of time. The Spirit Lounge is chomping at the bit to come on in.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Serena.
Thanks, Simon Crisp and James from BAV. Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Bye.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night? When everything's a little clearer in the light of day. And we know the night is always gonna be here anyway.
Thinking of you's working up my appetite. Looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Rubbing sticks and stones together make the sparks ignite. And the thought of rubbing you is getting so excited.
Sky rockets in flight. Afternoon delight.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.